You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another action-packed episode of the Around the Block. Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block, and that's where we're going today. Make no mistake about it. So we got a full plate, so let's jump right into it. All right, Susan?
Yeah, so we have some announcements.
Go for it.
So for those of you not following, FPC Duluth, which was slotted to be closed, has received a reprieve. Director Marshall was visiting there last week, and along with FCI Sandstone, I believe, and made the decision to reverse that previous decision. So for those who are still there, that, you know, that's close to home, or folks who were looking, I know we had a conversation this week with someone that was hoping to get there. So that's a good news for families. Also, we're going to talk about the new task force, also really important, but just a little PSA regarding people scamming families. The Bureau will never, ever, ever call you and ask for personal information, tell you about fees or anything like that for your loved one to participate in home confinement or halfway house. The Bureau has posted news announcements and information for reporting that. But please, please, just, you know, these people are preying on families who are just obviously desperate to have their loved ones home and want to do everything they can to facilitate that. And they're just pretty low in terms of humanity or lack thereof. So, yeah. So now let's jump into the task force. That was a huge announcement. The task force is utilizing DSCC staff, designation sentence computation staff members. A team has been assigned that are working with that manual recalculation. And this is really actually really great news. There are 22 regional reentry offices across the country, and they average about 5 staff members if fully staffed. So for them to be able to go back and look at everyone they have, both the folks that are currently in halfway house and those that have been designated and are in the pipeline, as we say, they're still in the institution, but they have a designation, as well as to continue to process the paperwork that is coming in every single day. It is not unrealistic to say that at any given time, a regional reentry office probably has upwards of 100 to 125 packets they are processing on a daily basis, possibly more, but I'm gonna go with 100 to 125 a day. Yep. So to bring in a separate team of individuals centrally located with access to all the information that they need to do that manual calculation, and those are dedicated folks, is just a really fantastic resource for the regional reentry offices. Folks should think of this as a triage process. So those that are sitting in halfway house now that could be looking at home confinement, those are going to be the first people that they're going to look at. And then from there, it'll be looking at those in the institutions, but close to transferring, and then those further out.
The priority? So say that again. They'll be looking
folks
at
that are in halfway house now
in halfway
that
house
could go to home confinement.
Okay.
So we want to move those out first, and of course that as this process is working through, beds are going to hopefully we'll see more flexibility with beds for those needs based placements. The other part to this is there's a lot of communication and going to be training going on in the field so that as these new dates are coming out, that the case managers in the institution are going to be, those unit teams are going to be working with those reentry offices to come and go back and say, hey, we've got this person, you know, here's John Smith, and he's looking at a halfway house date of X right now. He can go to home confinement.
There's a rumor that
doing that process.
So there's a big rumor floating around that there's big case managers training going on Tuesday and Wednesday. I don't know if that's just in certain regions or did you hear anything about that? That's a mass case.
I have not, but would it surprise me? No. You know, when I was still working, it was not uncommon for us to hold what we considered national informational meetings that looked very much like training. We were conveying information and we would do them over 2 days. Obviously, the folks in DC are on Eastern Standard Time. And you've got obviously most of the institution runs between Pacific Central and East Coast. But of course, you know, Puerto Rico is in a different time zone, as is Hawaii. So we would do it over 2 days to cover all of the time zones. And that could be anywhere from 2-3 hours to a full day, depending on the number of topics. You know, if they're just talking about the conditional home confinement, it might be shorter. But if they're also talking about prioritization in terms of the folks in the institution, I don't think you're going to see direct home confinement for individuals with higher security levels. Even if they can go, they're going to transition into halfway house, demonstrate they can do okay in the community in the halfway house, and then transition to home confinement. So I would expect quite a bit of training to go on, not only about the new date, but like who's the right case, who's the right case for home confinement. Obviously having not requiring the residential support of a halfway house is first, but safety and security is still an issue. I mean, let's be honest, safety and security is still an issue. They're still serving federal time. We've seen individuals testifying before Congress talking about the Bureau's study, post-release study that was done looking at individuals in home confinement under the CARES Act. And they found that CARES Act home confinement cases, those folks did better than individuals who were just regular home confinement. And for those who were involved in, you know, either... you know, I was obviously as an employee dealing with it, but whether you were in home confinement or you had a family member in home confinement, the requirements for CARES Act home confinement were stricter than general home confinement. So they found those individuals did better. So building on that model, obviously right now, you know, policy, kind of the existing policy spells out who we consider. I would think down the road you're going to see some different guidelines regarding direct home confinement versus general home confinement. General home confinement being you go to the halfway house and then you transition to the to home.
Right. And even if you're there a week or something, you know, it takes a while to go through the A&O, get your situation set up, employment verified, or employment for that matter, you know, so it's... it's a little bit of a
process. And really long term, something you and I have talked about is, does the 10% or 180 days even make sense anymore? When you consider we've got FSA guys that are doing long term or have the possibility of doing long term home confinement. We had CARES Act individuals. Some of them were out on home confinement for more than 3 years and did fine.
Still, you know, on home confinement, some of those 28 and 29 guys.
There might be a few that are still out there. If they weren't caught up with that large pardon or clemency group.
If they didn't make that clemency group, yeah.
Right,
They should have, you know what I mean?
And most did, as far as I know, but there's always that possibility that someone's still hanging out there.
Yes, for whatever reasons. Well, good. Good, good, good. So
those are our big announcements. I think we posted earlier today and we got some folks with some good questions.
I'll start the one from Mr. F, no pun intended, says, how can I get my loved one's case in front of the task force?
You can't. They're going to prioritize. They're going to triage this. This is not going to be a situation where you're going to be able to bump your person in front of someone else, particularly if your person is still sitting in the institution.
Right.
As we said, they're looking at the folks that could go to home confinement right now.
Right.
So if anybody tells you that they have some magic button that they think they can get your person elevated.
Yeah. And you just have to think of it from a triage standpoint, right? What's the first thing you're going to do in this thing is first thing you're going to look at the people that are already in RRC that need the home confinement right now to push all this. That's the first thing that has to happen. And then the people that are in RRC.
Absolutely. This is what we did when we first rolled out time credits in January of 2022. We knew we were going to have groups of people, blocks of people that we needed to act on. And we staged it up. Like we identified and generated the time credits for those in the community first.
Yep.
The idea that we would generate them, apply the credit, let those immediate releases happen. And like 3 days later, generated that first batch in the institution for the institution. We sent out, you know, we generated lists. Of course, back then we were kind of in that ad hoc interim procedure where we were generating, the research folks were generating monthly lists of people, and we were getting these multi-page spreadsheets, and they were working a little magic with color coding and prioritized who were going to be immediate releases. And
if you're a CMC right now in a low or a camp, what are you going to run rosters for? I mean, you're going to run rosters for how deep? Are you going to go PRDs?
In the initial triage, knowing that they're working on, you know, knowing the process of building how the calculators get built and have to be tested and debugged and do all of that, and they're working on that, I would probably be running my rosters. We know we still have people out there who have a designation date that is later than a traditional release date or replacement date. I would probably be running that roster first and identifying those cases that are clearly out.
Man, good point, because there are people that are still upside down out there, and even though they have a date, doesn't mean they're off the count. They're still in your institution.
Absolutely.
With a DST.
Absolutely. And it was one of those things, you know, maybe they did the paperwork and they had one date and then their date changed because they got 15 days. Maybe the unit team did the paperwork and the regional reentry office looked at the current release date and not the conditional date. I think down the road, a lot of those issues are going to resolve themselves with the referral form itself being changed and all of those date fields being auto-populated. I'm a big fan of lean management and using automation where we can. To eliminate errors.
We have, because we don't have to push the button anymore every month.
Lots of good changes have happened, but they're coming incrementally. And I know there's a lot of folks out there that think that the Bureau should just be able to snap their finger and make things change. But as you and I have talked about, and one of our main complaints with the law is the complexity of the law has literally slowed down the things that the Bureau can do. They've had to focus on different aspects of it. This issue with the MAC confinement is a perfect example of what's wrong with the law.
Right.
Because they have individuals earning credit right up until their release date. If they're earning less than 365, which means their dates are constantly changing. That was why the conditional release date had to be created, so that the case managers could still prepare halfway house packets and do that timely. My feelings about the law. It needs fixed.
Hey, let's go with another question.
Yes, let's do that.
All right, here we go. This is almost a multi-part question, so put your hat on. Okay. KW asks, other than ACE classes, is there anything else they can do to get the recidivism points down? Right now, my loved ones did everything possible. They know the only thing is age, ACE classes, or another staff member's opinion of family support. It's exceptional, but the case manager has it as average.
Okay, so two different things. Did you say for the recidivism score?
Yep.
Okay, so family support has nothing to do with the recidivism score. That is part of custody classification.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's part of custody classification. What moves the needle on recidivism? If you don't have your high school diploma, getting your high school diploma.
Okay.
If you have a substance abuse history, taking
drug
non-res
or RDAP,
or if you've gone 5 years and you are clean, because the way the scoring is, it's 5 years or no history is the best score. So if it's been more than 5 years, right, whether you've done RDAP and or non-res, the best score is more than 5 years clean. And again, if you have your GED, talked about the ACE courses. ACE courses are great.
5 years clear conduct, you mean?
Well, clear conduct actually is the expectation.
Yeah,
so if you get in trouble, it's negatively impacts your points.
I understand
like
that.
You just got to stay out of trouble, period.
Right. That's what you meant by clean, not like drug-free clean.
Oh, no. The 5 years clean is you have no documented use of any kind.
Okay.
So include your, you know, if you've been in prison for 3.5 years and you haven't gotten in trouble, because that would be your documented trouble, and your last documented use in your PSR was a year before you got in trouble.
Okay.
1 + 3.5 = 4.
All right.
Maybe you've done non-res, maybe you've done RDAP, but once you hit that 5 mark, right? Once you're 5 or more, your custody classification should be updated. And when the custody classification is updated, pattern gets updated. So in terms of that 5 years, it includes both no documented misconduct in custody and then the time prior to your coming into custody of last use.
Okay, so being drug free, some people have shorter sentences than 5 years, taking ACE classes, get your GED, and if you have a drug issue, respond to that. Anything else for recidivism?
Last thing, work programming.
Work
programs are looked at separately from regular programs, and you can get, it's one or two or more. And you should be talking to the education department as to which programs count as work programs and which count as ACE courses.
There you go.
So all of those. Now, what happens to the person who's done all of that? But because they were hell on wheels for the first 30, 40 years of their life, those criminal history points are really doing a number on them. If you have done all of those good things and you have done everything that you can do, including some of those more substantial programs, not just the little 5 hour, 10 hour ACE course, but done some of those more substantial programs, non-res, RDAP, Challenge, Brave, Life Connections, those meatier courses, you can, through your unit team, submit a request to the warden and ask for an exemption. And the warden can say, you know what? You have demonstrated a good faith effort toward lowering your recidivism rate. You have demonstrated positive conduct. You're not a threat to the community. All of these good things. And it is spelled out in the national policy.
Okay.
You can request. Now, the important thing for families and their loved ones to know is the unit, once that has been submitted, the unit team can only recommend approval or denial. They cannot deny it. Only the warden can approve or deny.
Right. All right. Let's move on to another quick one. Then after a quick one, we have a long one you may have to take notes on. But the quick one,
you
said good question. Is there anything a person in custody can do to advocate for themselves to get more SCA time? Speaking of longer sentences where they get no FSA and then they're relying on their SCA. So
sure, absolutely. So Bruce and I always promote self-advocacy as any person should be able to self-advocate for themselves. Yep. So where is that self-advocating happen? It's happening at team. It's being prepared when you walk into team. We had this conversation actually earlier today with a family member. Walking into team and saying, well, I've been down 10 years and I've stayed out of trouble and programmed. I'd like you to give me a year halfway house. Isn't the right way to go. Yes, longer sentences impact reentry needs. Staying out of trouble and programming demonstrates that you can be responsible. But staying out of trouble and doing good programming isn't what gets you in to halfway house under the Second Chance Act. It is a needs-based needs-based placement. So obviously someone who's been down a long time, depending on their family situation, they may be staying with a friend. They may be staying with, the computer was just acting funny. They may be staying with a family member. They may be staying with a cousin. But they're an adult. We expect them to move out. They may have temporary housing. They may not have permanent housing. How long were you out of the workforce? How long were you out of the workforce before you got in trouble? You know, we have folks who, and I know you remember this, that you look at their PSR and they have never had a legal job in their life.
Right.
And they're trying to come out and they've got to find work. Right. And that's tough to do when your only work history in the last 15 years is your prison job. It's doable. Yeah. We've got some wonderful reentry folks in the institution that work with releasing offenders to kind of build resumes with transferable skills. But trying to find a job when you've been out of the workforce for 15 or 20 years is tough as hell. Mm-hmm. There's the technology side. You know, there's the education side. What kind of skills did you have beforehand? What kind of skills do you have now? Being able to walk into your team and present what your needs are. In order for me to be successful in reentry, I've got to get a job. I've got to save up at least 3 or 4 paychecks. My cousin's going to put me up initially, but that's not a long-term situation. So I'm going to have to get a job and build up these paychecks because I've got to handle rent and utility deposits. I haven't worked in the last 18 years. While I've been here, I've been working over in the facilities department and I've been a plumber's assistant and I'm going to try to go to school for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, have a plan. Don't just go in and ask for a year in halfway house. Think about those life decisions that you got to make.
I had a guy last night on the website. Person is going to be a homeless person, except, I mean, straight up homeless, absolutely has needs. Do they do public law placements in addition to SCA?
Yes, that is, that is a definite possibility. Now, I'm going to throw this out there, the case manager in me. I saw that post and the way I interpreted it was, well, what's the benefit? You know, what are the pros and cons of saying I'm homeless? So let's not game the system, right? So Director Marshall on June 17th said, we are going to use halfway house for those that need residential services, and we're going to let those that don't need them go to direct home confinement so we can maximize home confinement. Now, prison being what it is, I know there are folks there going, well, I'm just going to tell them I'm homeless and then I'm going to get more time. Like, gaming the system is not a good idea. That's exactly what the whole criminogenic needs and reducing recidivism is about. But I'll stay off that soapbox for now. If you go in and you say you're homeless, and let's say you have a 24-month sentence, it's very possible your unit team will reach out to you to the probation office and say, you know, hey, he's only got a 24-month sentence. He's getting some FSA. He's getting his good conduct time. That's shortening up his sentence. But we wanted to talk to you about a public law placement.
Let's have him stay in that halfway house while he's on supervision, right?
That is right. Public law placement is continued halfway house placement after your release from the Bureau of Prisons. And what happens is the probation office sends a form to the institution and you as the individual sign it and accept and waive your right to a hearing. And then that probation officer is going to go back to the court and they are going to amend your supervised release. And for your first 120 or 180 days of supervised release to be spent on home confinement. Now, if it's
or
legitimate,
the RRC, right? Or
in a
RRC.
Halfway house, right. Right? Not home confinement. It's not like, if you're truly homeless, you got more needs than just getting a job and getting some rent money. Because to be homeless means you don't have a roof. You don't have any furniture to put in the under the roof so that you have a place to sleep. You got nothing.
Right. Boy, and back in the day, in the regional office, RM office, I remember particularly El Paso and the entire state of New Mexico, we did that a lot. I mean, these folks, they needed the time to get
their
situated.
Life together.
And man.
Because if you're truly homeless, even the 6 months, which is pretty common, and if you're only having a 24-month sentence after good conduct time in FSA, you would be hard pressed to get 6 months just because of the time it takes to get through that process.
Yeah, you're
but like hypothetically, if you're truly homeless, 6 to 9 months isn't enough.
Nope.
The reality is most people aren't. Most people have some family and friends and yeah, it's not a permanent situation.
Right.
But cognizant.
Yeah. And I was just taking the guy at his word, you know what I mean? But anyway, maybe it was late and I just had my guard down. But anyway, but yeah, if
that wasn't how I read it.
So anyway, I know. See, that's why the two of us cover 360 degrees. But yeah, okay. So long story short, if you're homeless, yeah, definitely identify as that. But beware that there'll be some possible.
And if you're homeless, one, I would be talking to your unit team well in advance. Two, if you're also sitting there with emails, an email list, and a phone list, and a visiting list, your unit team is going to question your homelessness status.
Right.
So if you are, obviously the needs are there. Yeah. You should be talking to your unit team. And I had it happen. I had a guy on my caseload, a young guy, short sentence, had been in a lot of trouble, burned the bridges. The family truly said, we don't want you back. You have burned us for the last time. And it was sad because this was a kid. He was under 25 years of age. We had to go out to probation and get him a public law placement because this was actually pre-Second Chance Act. So his sentence was short enough that he wasn't getting good conduct time, but he was too short to even get him into a halfway house. Because like I said, this was before the Second Chance Act. It was a long time ago. And we had to go work with probation, and we did. And we got him a public law placement because he needed it.
Yep. So,
all right.
Awesome. Okay. So go ahead and get your Big Chief tablet. Get ready to.
All right.
I'm going to read
multi-part question.
But some of it is, you know, so person was putting in for halfway house. The case manager put in for a date. The recommended date they put in was December 16th. He was granted January 6th of the next year. By my calculations, his projected release date should be April 9th of next year. After he moves to the 15-day rate, they will give him 93 days in the halfway house. He has his 180-day unit team meeting this coming Friday. He has been in custody for almost 5 years. It'll be 5 years in October. but didn't actually hit the didn't hit the BOP until January 21st of this year.
Okay.
Let's see. He'll have to find a new job and career because he can't go back to what he did. He wants to go to college on his military benefits. Is there anything he can do to request more halfway house time?
So if I understand it correct, does he already have, from the message, does he already have a date back, or just
sounds
they've
like
already?
He might already, when he, they said he was granted January 6th, 2026.
Right.
But I'm not, I know that's what's.
So
it's kind of odd.
He came in January, he has not gone to the 15 days and it's going to change.
Yeah.
And at that point, they'll need.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he's or it changes with, I'd have to do the math. He's getting pretty close at this point, January. Actually, it'll be next month. When it changes, you know, most unit teams, I would say talk to the unit team.
So here's the second part. Awesome. I thought that the projected release date should have been used rather than the date online. In his unit team, July 25th, can he ask for more halfway house time? And is this like the situation where you said on the show, the case manager can email the RRM and ask for a new halfway house date based on the new 15-day projected release date?
But until he gets to the 15 days, he's not there.
Right.
So I would not recommend, I mean, talking to the unit team, if he's going to team this week or next week and his date's going to not change yet, obviously talking to the unit team and saying, hey, I know like as of right now, I'm at the 10 days, but next month it's going to change to 15 and my date's all going to change. Are you going to reach out to the reentry office to request an adjustment in my date? That's what we start with, is are you going to do it?
Right.
Don't asking them to do it now before the date has changed is spinning your wheels.
Yeah.
But asking the question, are you going to once my date changes, is the way to go.
And he had asked for a copy of his 210 unit team, said no, but they let him see the 210 and take notes. I know.
Okay, I don't know why they wouldn't let him have a copy of a 210. A 210 is a releasable document.
Yep.
In the releasable section, he is 100% allowed to have a copy, but as long as he has the information. But again, asking the team, when my date changes next month, when I go to my 15-day earning rate, will you reach out to the regional reentry office?
Right.
And if they're talking to their case manager and the case manager says no, then talking to the unit manager and start your working up the chain of command is appropriate. Because what we see happen, right, is that 15 days gets applied and either the individual ends up with a release date, a designation date actually after their release date, or they end up with a 2-week halfway house placement, which is just
ridiculous.
Yes. So that's what I would say.
Or give us
lay the groundwork now by demonstrating your knowledge now. And I'm sure it was a loved one sending in the message and not the person on the
news. Oh yeah. It was a loved one.
Okay. Thank you.
We just had
that question about cell phones again. So we had a person asking about how bad a cell phone shot could end up being.
Yeah. And folks, oh my gosh, we got some clients coming toward the end of things. Some big decisions are made and whammo, these 100 series level shots weigh in. Don't do it, man. Okay. I mean, just
two guys just, with cell phone shots and one with another 100 and they have just shot themselves in both feet.
Right. One was a repeat cell phone, right? So that's a wrap, maybe.
Yep.
So, man, folks, please, you know, be good out there. What else was I going to say? I had something else fairly profound about that. You know, it's interesting because I'm sitting here talking and we sent out, 15 things today.
It's like, and I'm not done.
I know you're not even done. It's like we're case managers. Please consider, according to this, their date will be that currently. please, thank you. You know, take a look at, you know what I mean? And so trying to kind of nudge folks that are in charge of these folks to, okay, let's put them in for this date. Man, this training can't happen soon enough. God, I can't wait for this period of really BOP history to be over.
Yeah, this is really a huge change. And I've said this a couple of times on the Facebook page, and I know we talked about it, last week or whenever. This is a huge change. And because they're going to utilize that conditional release date, and because case managers should not math, they are creating that conditional release calculator. And it's coming, just like, you know, what a huge tool it was when they rolled out the conditional release date calendar. Yeah. And then 11 months later, they were able to roll out the conditional placement day calendar.
Right.
All of those tools are so helpful, and not just for the case manager, for the individual that wants to get out on time, right? But also for the reentry folks in planning bed space. They are better able to predict how many beds they're going to need and in what locations, so that they can be soliciting new contracts, they can be including budgetary requests. I mean, these tools are so helpful. And it'll be really interesting to see how many individuals that are in halfway house now and could, based on their conditional release date, go to home confinement immediately. And depending on the amount of equipment that's available, when you kind of go across the 22, the 22 region or regional reentry offices, I mean, you could be looking at 15, 20, 25, maybe more on the average at every office. Do they have the equipment?
Yeah.
You know,
fun thing. When I retired, I was, part of my territory was New Mexico. So we'd go out there, fly into El Paso. We'd have guys in home confinement in Farmington, Durango, Colorado area. Man, probation had to take those cases. There's no, you know what I mean? The halfway house was next to nothing. So I thought, I'm going to have like Bruce's home confinement. And I have like a van and I'd drive around it.
Just drive around.
Hey, man.
You know, we had to do some creative, the number of people that surged to home confinement during COVID, I could see halfway houses, the RRMs utilizing the old fashioned. And I know a lot of the institution, a lot of the regional office or reentry offices use the ankle monitors, use the wrist bracelets, use the cell phones, but old fashioned landline still works.
Yeah.
In this interim where we're surging a population out.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily haul the newfangled toys and things for it.
Some of those lines are voice over IP and it's not compatible. So yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how they do it. Again, I think once they're through, just like the other events, once we're through it, and it may take weeks to months to unwind, I think it's going to run much smoother.
It just seems like, I know we had these, I like how you say the word events. That's a nice term, this event.
Well, Trust me, when I was working, it was an event.
And we've braved crack versus powder cocaine. We braved all these other things, all these mass exoduses. CARES Act, I braved along, with folks. But man, this one seems like there's just tens of thousands of people in this event in a lurch, waiting, it just seems like,
but it was a big change. And one of the first things that had to happen was, the Bureau had to ask the question, because we started talking about this while I was still working. Okay. Had to ask the question, legally, can we put someone on home confinement, that 10% limitation based on their conditional release date, a date that includes both earned and unearned credit.
See,
it's a legal question.
If you think about like home, Okay, folks, listen, here's, you can fix this if I'm wrong, Susan. So home confinement, just kind of like Second Chance Act. Second Chance Act's been around since 95, right? Right. Home confinement's been around
2007.
Since... 2007. Okay, 2000, excuse me, that's right, just testing. Okay.
But we had halfway house and home confinement before then.
All right. So what I'm saying is here, we've had home the issue of home confinement, Old Testament, way back. You want to go back to, okay, even old law people, right? Anyway. So here's home confinement. Well, home confinement with these, right, whatever's last, 180 days, yada, yada, yada. That's kind of carried through all these new iterations. So you're thinking of something like, hey, there's my home confinement date, 10% or whatever. Well, that kind of rubric is old, correct?
Yes. It's been a thing for decades. The difference is,
I think I just answered the question about, okay, well, now that we have all these other methodologies,
we gotta bring in, you know, but it's a legal question because of the restriction in the law that says 10% or 180 days. Can you apply it? And the Bureau is going with yes. But it was a real discussion. Can you apply it to a date that doesn't exist yet? It
exactly.
only exists in planning. It is.
That,
it is. It
exactly.
doesn't exist because
but
earned
yet.
Credit isn't earned until it's earned.
It's earned, and that's where people call us spitting nails and furious. Like, hey, my piece of paper says this. That's just, and you've said this, and we've said it till we're blue in the face, the laws don't play well together. Unfortunately, with FSA, you have to have it learned, and that's where the whole thing about stacking and all, and front-loading. Ugh, right?
And it's so, a dirty word. We do not front-load.
Yeah, it's like, well, you have a projected release date. Is that stacked, or is that front-loaded? Is it, well, anything that's projected, I guess, is front-casted, forecasted, right? But it doesn't mean you're going to get it, because on some of these things, you have to earn it in order to get it, and it's frustrating, right?
Right. It would have been so much easier if instead of having the Bureau have to create this total external system. So we already have this kind of a tiered good conduct time. If you are not, if you don't have a high school diploma and aren't participating and won't participate, not that mm-hmm. you're on a waiting list waiting to get in,
right,
but you're saying I ain't going back to school. You could be put in a position where you only earn 42 days of good conduct time. You get penalized on your good conduct time. If you took right. the reverse and you created good conduct time incentives, so walking in the door, instead of penalizing someone, you say, okay, and let's keep it at 54 days. Everyone gets 54 days a year. If you have a history of substance abuse and you participate in non-res or RDAP, well, then you're going to go up from 54 to 66 days a year. If you don't have a history, you get to jump the hurdle and go to 66, right? High school diploma. You could take key things relevant to reentry, substance abuse, education, work skills.
So if I'm an inmate with a college degree, are you discriminating against me? Because if I just come in there without my high school diploma, I would have gotten more GCT.
You get past that hurdle. But if you don't, we've now created an incentive that says you get it. Now from here on, for the rest of your sentence, you're going to earn X more days every time for the rest of your sentence.
Okay, so
had we done something like that and built it into the statutory, they wouldn't
warning,
have to
folks.
Do
We're,
all of this.
Susan and I are just talking theory here. This is not
just
real.
Talking theory.
This is not real.
This is not real. But what they didn't do, which created all these external calculators and all these external devices, is for those, if you flash back to the old law, right, to parole. In addition to the statutory good conduct time, there was also a thing called meritorious time.
Yeah, meritorious.
And meritorious time you got if you were working in industry, you got IGT, it was industry time. If you were in a camp, you got camp time. If you were in halfway house, you got community custody time or community center time. I can't remember the exact thing. And then for everybody else, there was this meritorious time that if you were in population, working and staying out of trouble, you got these meritorious days. And if you got in trouble and you went to SHU for any reason, it stopped. You went through the process, whatever that process was, be it disciplinary or administrative. When you came back out of SHU, you got back into a job after you'd been there for 30 days. Your case manager gets a little piece of paper, sent it over to the records office, and your meritorious time started again. If you transferred, it stopped. When you got to your new place and you started working, 30 days, you started again. They could have done the same thing. That infrastructure still exists.
Oh,
and they could have
nobody remembers.
Program, because I'm old.
Because only you and I are left alive. Everybody else is washed away in the sand.
Well, that's what happens when you like start working when you're like right out of college,
right?
And stay there for 33 years. Yeah, I had old law cases as a new case manager. I had several. Like we had active parole hearings still going on. But my point is the infrastructure is still there. And instead of using being able to use the existing infrastructure, we had to create this entirely separate thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that's the law is so crazily complex.
And you know what? It's and what you describe, and folks, thanks for listening. How are we doing? We got three and a half minutes.
You got to watch me. I can go on a
all this stuff was real, but it was real back in the 80s. And you know, those were old law inmates. But, you know, she's right. And these are things that case managers can understand because they make sense, because they're quid pro quo. You do this, you get that. You do this, you get that. And that's kind of how prison works, you know, or actually real life, right? If I go to work, I get – okay. So, but all this projected stuff and front loading stuff and stacking stuff and stuff that hasn't happened yet, and maybe this and maybe that depends on a 5-factor review. Well, I don't know if there's availability to bed space or that or an ankle monitor or whatever, you know, good Lord, you know, now it's like all these other variables. It's frustrating. You can hear our frustration. I know you're frustrated. Of course, we're frustrated.
And the case managers are frustrated. Anyway, every time they turn around,
everybody's frustrated.
There's something new for them to try to figure out.
Right. Right. It is an interesting era for a Taylor Swift fans.
Yes.
Whatever that is, this era. Well, folks, let's take a breath. Thank you for responding to our question and answer thread. Please continue with that. I'll post another question or answer thread on the Facebook group. We also have our YouTube channel, First Step Act. That's what it's called on YouTube. Of course, this show is on the LA Talk Radio website. It's archived. We're also on Amazon Audible and, of course, Apple Podcasts. So we are getting listeners from all over the world. Thank you. We have some people from some places. I don't even know where it's at, man, listening to the show. So thank you so much for
listening. Had our first purchase of our FSA Time Credits book, second edition, from the UK. You know, we get most of ours from out of the United States, but we had a Canada purchase, and then this month we actually had a purchase from the UK.
And it's always sobering, like, well, they're earning FSA, but they get deported early. Anyway, but seriously, that's another show. Well then, any parting thoughts, Susan?
The FSA continues to be pretty daunting. The book Unlocking Federal Time Credits that Bruce and I wrote, second edition.
Oh, and our article.
And our article, yes. We posted the article on the Facebook page. But it really breaks down all these different component pieces. It went to publishing in May. It is current, with the exception of these last couple of things. Interestingly enough, in the book, we talk about this problem of the home confinement and the Second Chance Act in the book.
Awesome. Yes. So make sure you get that book.
Yes.
And keep on the website, on our Facebook group, and we'll see everybody here and then some next time on Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block here on LA Talk Radio. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
Take care.
Next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.